on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and today's Wednesday, June 11th, 2025. And as we are well in to the last month of the second quarter of 2025, almost through the first half of the year, a lot has happened. And when a lot happens, it's easy to put your head down, bury your head in the sand, be overwhelmed by all that is around you. And so we here at InvestTalk think that our job, our goal, our mission is to help make it a little bit easier, to help you understand a little bit more. And our goal is what your goal should be: to make yourself a better and more informed investor. Now, to that end, every day, Justin or I, or sometimes both of us, bring a mixture of educational items, some actionable items, some stories, some checklists, some what to do, what not to do, some warnings. But most importantly, the most important part of this show is answering your finance and investment questions through your live calls, through your voicemails on our Anytime Listener line, over there in the iTunes review section, or in the comments section of our YouTube channel. And so before we go over what happened in the market today, and it was definitely an interesting day, things are developing as we record, as we go live. We'll go over all of that. We'll talk about the show topics as well, but let's tackle this caller question now.
Hi, this is Matt in Miami. I'm just calling to try and get your opinion on Constellation Energy Corp, CEG. I saw they recently made a deal for uranium energy and Facebook with Meta buying it and using it for some of its energy for AI. Just curious your thoughts on this for the future. Thank you very much. Love the show.
Constellation Energy Corp, that is ticker CEG, is a leader in carbon-free power, right? So they have nuclear power, hydropower, solar power, wind power. Their business is pretty spread out between the Midwest, the Mid-Atlantic, and those other power regions that you're seeing here. And from a performance perspective, Constellation's been doing very well, right? Up 33.84% over the past 52 weeks, up 30% year to date. Their revenue growth really coming out of the pandemic, coming out of 2021, looks pretty solid. Big dip into 2023. But as the demand for AI for data centers, the demand for nuclear power, the demand for alternative power sources has risen, on the back of the demand associated with these data centers, well, the price has appreciated as well, and revenue has grown as well. And you've seen margins expand from 7.7% to 15.9% last year, projected about 12.2%, still solid margins for an energy company. Now, what has been driving this price higher to the point where it's trading at 28.7 times forward-looking earnings, well above its five-year average, is that they made a deal, a 20-year agreement with Meta to supply nuclear-generated electricity from its Clinton, Illinois plant starting in 2027 for Meta's data center, data-intensive, power-intensive use cases. They also made some pretty big strategic acquisitions in the past couple years. Looks like, from what I'm seeing, to the tune of around $50 billion worth of acquisitions, and had pretty robust Q4 earnings. GAAP EPS, $2.71. The net annual income of $11.89, far beating outstripping their guidance. And they've got earnings upgraded over the past couple months as well. It's a $91 billion market cap company with not a lot of debt, only $8.3 billion in debt. Cash flow is improving, profitability is improving. They pay a little bit of a dividend, about 50 basis points. But then that begs the question, okay, is it too expensive? It's trading at 3.7 times sales, 7 times price to book. It's a little bit more expensive than all its competitors too. Look at Duke Energy, Southern, you know, big companies that are exposed to nuclear energy as well. Very expensive compared to those. Now, from a technical perspective, from a momentum perspective, it's kind of ranging, right? It's ranging between 200 and 300 ever since last September, trying to break out. I don't know necessarily if it will. It's got earnings coming up at the end of next month. You're probably going to see some continued ranging then. For me, it's a great name. I love the theme. I think nuclear power going to be a big theme, big explosive theme. No pun intended, bad pun right there. Going forward, we're looking at names as well within the nuclear space. But right now, I think it's a little too expensive, trading towards that upper end of its five-year range. I'd keep an eye on it. I'd definitely keep an eye on it. It's Constellation Energy, ticker CEG. Let's go to our first live call. Thomas from Santa Cruz, who has a question about Rio. Do you own it? Or are you looking to buy it?
Well, I just bought a little bit of it. I've been watching it for a long time. I have a question regarding it. First of all, thanks for taking my call. But
yeah, thanks for calling.
Basically, evaluation-wise, but also how to view the company. I know that it's been in a long downtrend for a while now. I actually work in the steel industry, and I'm aware of the tariffs that are going on right now. And I know there's so many factors. So I want to know how I should be viewing a company like this. I have a lot of precious metals. I don't really have any steel, but I kind of want to know, is this like the United States, a rebound out of tariffs? Is that even baked into this at all? How should I view it? And then its current price to where would be a good price to buy it? Are we getting into that ballpark?
Yeah, that's a great question because like you said, there is a lot going on here, right? Rio Tinto, is a big mining leader, right? They produce iron ore, copper, aluminum. You can see it all here. About 51% of their business is iron ore. And with global demand kind of depressed, as you know very well, you've seen prices been pretty low. And Rio Tinto suffered because of that over the past 52 weeks, down 12.43%. But it's also important to note, as I struggle to find my mouse on my screens here, that it's also underperformed the industry as a whole pretty consistently over the past 2 years. And one of the big reasons is because a lot of political upheaval related to two of its projects, one big copper mine, where they own about 65% of it in Latin America, I think, and then another mine issue they've had in Australia as well. And so when you put that on top of some of these secular issues that the industry has faced as a whole, that's really one of the reasons why Rio hasn't been doing very well. Now, add on top of that, in the past couple months, we do have tariff issues. How's that going to drive demand going forward? For me, what we've seen within the metal space is, and you say you already have exposure to it, is we've tried to stay a little bit more focused towards copper as a long play because of the unavoidable, unstoppable shift towards renewable energy, right? Not just within the EV market, which is already falling a little bit, but you see it with these data centers, with these AI plays. They are more interested in moving towards renewable energy because it is cleaner to make. It's cheaper in the long run once you get those base loads. And so we kind of have stuck towards the precious metals and the copper space for now. Iron, different story, very demand, very industrial demand driven. I just have had so many issues with this company because of the regulatory scrutiny it's had. The political and legal risk is pretty rough here. And so I expect it to be pretty choppy going forward and maybe continue to lag, even if demand starts to pick up out of the issues that we've seen in the past 6 months or so. And that's why I think you've seen it underperform over the past couple of years. So that's kind of my feelings about Rio Tinto. It's a really loaded name for all of those reasons. Thanks for the call. Now we're going into a short break. On the other side, I will preview today's topics and take more of your questions, be they live or from our voice bank. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Okay, got to get serious with my finances. I've been working a long time and I know there's still got to be more that I can do to build my wealth quicker. I don't want to have to work forever.
If you are not maximizing your employer-sponsored retirement plan, KPP Financial can help. With our professional oversight, you can potentially enhance your investment performance by an average of 3% annually. At KPP Financial, we provide a comprehensive 401k management program designed to optimize your retirement savings. Our approach includes creating custom investment allocations tailored to your goals and risk tolerance. That can make a big difference in your favor.
Maybe it's time to tune up my retirement plan.
For more information on how you can take control of your retirement savings, visit our website, kppfinancial.com.
KPP Financial. Sounds good.
Luke Guerrero is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks lower in trading on Wednesday. They were all over the place. It was up a little bit. It was down a little bit. We finished down for the day. The Dow flat. S&P 500 down 27 basis points. NASDAQ down 50 basis points. Russell 2000 down about 38. So what led the way? Well, what led the way down were industrial metals, rare earth metals, transports, regional banks, staple retailers, big tech, also mostly lower across the board. Best performer, energy. The reason why? Late oil strength from potentially rising tensions in the Middle East. One of the stories we'll actually talk about a little bit later on. Treasury is a bit firmer. Curve steepening on the back of a dovish CPI print. The dollar down about 40 basis points. Gold slightly higher, though not really by a notable amount. And as I already said, crude oil ended up 4.9% on the day. Defensive, I would say, was the tone of the day, even probably not what the administration wanted to see. Given the news about a supposed deal, which was really just an agreement between the US and China to create a framework to implement last month's de-escalation that was agreed upon in Geneva. And so what we get out of this is, well, the US has a 55% tariff, China's a 10% tariff. The US gets access to rare earth metals, albeit for only 6 months guaranteed. And so there's a lot to dig in. We'll also dig into that in a little bit as well. Scott Bessent, though, suggesting the White House is prepared to roll the tape forward, meaning pause retaliatory tariffs for another 90 days for trading partners who are negotiating in good faith. And the main macro data point on the day was inflation. May marks the fourth straight month of cooler CPI data than expected, despite some impact from tariffs. Pretty dovish print saw, I guess, what you could describe as a somewhat bullish steepening move in bonds. May CPI was up about 10 basis points month over month, below what April saw, which was about 20 basis point increase. Core CPI also up 10 basis points month over month. The expectations was a 30 basis point increase. So headline CPI was up about 2.4% year over year. Core was up about 2.8% year over year versus that consensus of 2.9%. Looking ahead, PPI and claims are out on Thursday. Allegedly, Senate Republican leaders will be meeting with the president at the White House to discuss the reconciliation bill on Thursday and preliminary University of Michigan consumer sentiment and inflation expectations for June, cap off the week on Friday. All righty, we've got a lot of ground to cover in the next 40 minutes or so. So here's a little bit of what I have planned for you. My main focus point concerns this question. Which U.S. stock sectors face the greatest risk from tariffs? Tariffs pose the most significant threat to consumer, cyclical, and basic material sectors, such as retail, vehicles, chemicals, and metals, while sectors like consumer defensive, utilities, and healthcare are expected to weather the impact with limited damage. Also, we'll touch on that deal, if you can call it that, between the US and China, putting a 6-month limit on the easing of rare earth exports, right? Originally, China was going to not give us anything. Then they said, we'll export some, supposedly only for the next 6 months. We'll dive into all of that. We'll also touch on oil for our next two stories, if we can get to both of them. The first, talking about that 5% jump to a 2-month high as tensions rise in the Middle East. So what the heck is going on? And what does that mean for oil supply and oil prices moving forward? And should we have time at the end of the show, we may touch a little bit on how U.S. oil output is set for its first annual drop since the pandemic. Certainly the opposite of drill, baby, drill. Now we're moving to a new break. Still to come, my main focus point, more answers to your voice bank questions. And of course, you can call me anytime at 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right, you'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at InvestTalkStore.com.
Let's go to Chris from Maine, who has a question about Amgen. Do you own it? Are you looking to buy it?
Yeah, hey, Luke. Thanks, as always, for taking my call. Looking to buy it. I've been watching it for a little bit, kind of been on the hunt for a pharma stock to add to the portfolio, and seeing what you guys think about that company on the whole.
Yeah, and you know, I agree with you, the premise of this whole thing, which is healthcare has been beaten down quite a bit, and I think there's some good opportunities out there within the healthcare space. So Amgen, for those of you who don't know, it's a global biotech powerhouse. It's actually headquartered about a stone's throw away from where I grew up in Thousand Oaks, California. And as with any biotech company, it's all about what patents you got and what you got in the pipeline. And in their case, they have some pretty solid candidates in the pipeline. They have MariTide, which they just recently spoke about. And you know, new data is expected on that this month. It's a mid-stage obesity drug. They have a couple cancer treatment drugs that are in the pipeline as well. One that may get some approval pretty soon now. That's supposed to reduce the amount of patients that need chemo by about 84% for a specific cancer type, which is just off the top of my head. I can't think about it right now. But looking at this company, cash flow is pretty solid. In Q1, cash flow was at about $1 billion, twice what the consensus looked at. Growth was better than consensus, revenue better than consensus, bottom line earnings better than consensus as well. That's a $157 billion market cap company. It doesn't have that much debt for being one of those biotech names, only about $57 billion in debt. And its revenue growth is pretty solid, about 7.4% on an annualized basis. Pretty solid growth nearing that, you know, is projected going into this next year from 33 to 35 billion. And their margins are solid as well. Traditionally in the 20 to 30 range, dipped in 2024, probably back up to 32 is where it's projected to be in 2025. Again, the name of the game for all these things is, what do they have in patents? What do they have in the pipeline? I think they got some good products in the pipeline. Certainly, you know, it's done well this year. It's up about 11.9%. This little FactSet sentiment score, which you could see if you're watching YouTube, is essentially saying, okay, what is the sentiment of this name compared to names within the sector? Well, it ranks it in the top 10. It uses a bunch of AI language processing to discover that. So that's not something that we use as gospel, but certainly something we'd like to see. And at the same time, it's trading at about its five-year range. And so overall, I like it. I like Amgen. I think it's a solid company. Again, grew up in the shadow of it, not too far away. And it also pays a solid dividend, 3.3%. So if you're looking for a healthcare name, I think this is a pretty solid one. Looks good to me. That is AMGN, Amgen Inc. Thanks for the call. Now, my main focus point today concerns an important question, as we seems like always have the implementation of tariffs on the horizon, though they continually get kicked down the road. And that is, what sectors may suffer and what sectors may benefit, right? Since early April, we have been trying to see what the heck is going on here. And so consumers and businesses are facing somewhat unprecedented volatility and expectations, all because of these sweeping tariffs. They're on again, they're off again, they're kicked down the road. There's courts that are saying we're going to implement them. There are courts that are saying they can't be implemented. And so Morningstar did this thing where they said, okay, let's model this. Let's do a bear case, let's do a bull case, let's do a base case, and take a look at what sectors are hit the hardest. And across the board, as you'd expect, consumer cyclical, retail, apparel, vehicles, parts, take the big brunt of both the base and the bear case of tariffs. Basic materials, metals, mining, chemicals, also highly vulnerable. Why? Global weakening demand. Things become more expensive. Consumers aren't able to spend and buy as much. So the most negatively affected sectors are retail, vehicle and parts, asset management, chemicals, metals minings, and apparel. Again, this is just for a base and a bear case. If tariffs are worse or as we expect them now, those are things you might want to avoid. Now, on the other side, consumer defensive shows some pretty strong resilience. Food, beverages, personal products fare far better in all of the cases in which tariffs are implemented. Utilities, healthcare also experience minimal declines compared to the couple of sectors we mentioned. Least affected industries, probably across the board, software, insurance, telecoms, agriculture, all show limited exposure throughout the spectrum, all the way from bear to base to bull. I think the important thing here is noting that in order to analyze what is going on, you have to look at a wide array of possibilities because, frankly, nobody knows what is happening. And so it's important as investors to prepare our portfolios for any possible scenario. And you can't do that without looking at the potential outcomes given various stresses. The key thing here is be selective, maybe tilt towards those defensive sectors, those quality names, companies with moats, companies with pricing power, companies with strong balance sheets, and remain cautious. Being caught on the wrong side of this trade can be pretty painful if you pick some of those sectors we mentioned that will fare very poorly should tariffs be fully implemented. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this headline. The bull case for stocks is growing on Wall Street. There are increasing expectations of resilient earnings growth and supportive economic backdrop. So major Wall Street strategists are upgrading their stock market outlooks. That's tomorrow, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
No matter what our day looks like, I think we can agree that we all need nourishment that fuels us, right? So let me tell you about Kachava's Whole Body Meal Shakes. I'm really liking them. And bonus surprise, the Kachava Shakes come in 5 delicious flavors. Chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, coconut acai. Variety is a good thing. And it's easy to incorporate Kachava's Whole Body Meal Shakes into my daily routine. I like to personalize my Kachava by adding nice touches like frozen blueberries, almond milk, creatine. For me, the idea is to mix it up while keeping my body and mind nourished all day. In fact, Kachava is a whole body meal with plant-based protein that actually tastes delicious. In those 5 indulgent flavors I mentioned, you get 25 grams of 100% plant-based protein with every 2 scoops of Kachava. You get 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Kachava is non-GMO. There are no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. There's no soy, no animal products, no gluten, and no preservatives. You can even try Kachava risk-free with their Love It guarantee. Fuel your day with Kachava. Go to kachava.com and use code INVEST for 15% off on their subscription for a limited time. That's Kachava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A. .com, code INVEST for 15% off.
Invest Talk. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Richard in Santa Clarita, who has a question about CLX. You own it, or are you looking to buy it?
Looking to buy it. In terms of this particular stock, I always thought it would be its valuation in terms of price would be good at like 139, 138. Historically, during the pandemic, of course, it just shot up to 200 and something. It has come down considerably. It's all the way down to 126 right now. Looking at its earnings, they look like they're going to drop off maybe in the a bit. But, this is as a long-term value stock of, cleaning products, they're not going away.
Yeah.
It seems like at this particular price that it's it looks like maybe it's starting to show some support down here at, 126, although I guess it has dropped a bit down to this. What do you think of this as a long-term investment at this particular price right now?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. CLX is the Clorox company, so think bleach, right? They have been doing pretty poorly over the past year or so, down about 4%, down 22.26%. Year-to-date, down 14.94% over the past 3 months. And a lot of that is because revenue has fallen pretty consistently after shooting up, right? So you mentioned they shot up in the pandemic. Of course, for some reason, can't remember why, people were very concerned about being clean all the time. And revenue continued to grow, after falling in 2022, it grew into 2023. But this downward trend, even with differences in prices for their products, revenue has fallen. And so when you see this, you'd expect, okay, maybe margins aren't looking that great. And they're again, down from their pre-pandemic high. So even in the pandemic, they had lower margins than they did in 2020. Now, that's projected to grow again into the end of this year from 3.9% to 12.4%. But the big thing that is really driving this downward is margin collapse and revenue decline as well. You have really weak demand. You have some changing consumer behavior because of uncertainty surrounding the tariffs, and they're trying to streamline their product line. And so with all of this, they're taking this opportunity to refocus the business towards more of those profitable areas. You've seen also something that you don't like seeing when you're thinking about investing in a company is, I don't necessarily take analyst ratings and analyst price targets as gospel. But it's important to see the trend, right? And you're seeing a lot of downgrades from big banks, big bank analysts, more towards the hold and neutral, though not in the sell range. But your question is about what about at this price? And it's trading at 18.6 times forward-looking earnings. It's trading just about at the low over the past 5 years. And that was kind of a whipsaw of a five-year period if you really think about where demand was going. And so could it get cheaper? Maybe, but the bigger question is, what is growth going to look like compared to other places you could put your money? And so I think there are better opportunities out there. I think it faces a lot of headwinds. And even though it's cheaper than it really has been over the past 5 years, what's really the catalyst to drive this thing forward when it's been struggling on the revenue, growth, and margin perspective? That's CLX, Clorox Company. Thanks for the call. All right, let's keep things moving and play another listener question from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Andrew from New Hampshire. I really appreciate your show. Calling about Graco, GGG. I was surprised to hear one of your recent callers say that you had taken it out of your portfolio. I was surprised because I thought that it had been a strong holding for one of your portfolios. And I would like to understand, both confirm that that's the case, that you took it out of your portfolios, and if so, why? Is it related to half their business being related to the housing industry, which you maybe think has some near-term headwinds? Thanks.
Yeah, well, it's a good question. Let me pull it up here. Ticker GGG. We do no longer hold it in our portfolios. It's an industrial machinery company. And so essentially what they specialize is in fluid handling. So think pumps and sprays. For contractors, for industrials, and for processes as well. One thing that has benefited this company over the past year is really their innovation. And so they have created a product line that is far more energy efficient, and companies who are hesitant to invest when demand is depressed, well, these are the types of products they're going to buy regardless of where demand for within the industrial space is. Now, it's a $14 billion company. It doesn't have much debt, only about $50 million worth of debt. Its cash flow looks fine. It's improving slightly, maybe not enough to justify being really excited about it. Its margins, again, improving up from 22% to about 23%, projected to fall back down to 22.5%. But it's also pretty expensive, 28 times forward-looking earnings. Not near the high of 36, but well, you know, a little bit above the average of 27 as well. Price to cash flow, 23.4 times. Again, still a little bit expensive here. And it's been a consistent underperformer of its industry. So from a momentum perspective, relative to the sector, it hasn't looked great for quite some time. It's clawed back from a low of 75, trying to break out again past that 87 level. But overall, I think what really drove us to get this out of our portfolio is that you have finite capital to allocate, and the industrial space has just been suffering, and this name as well has been suffering relative to its sector over the past 3 years. Revenue growth is just slow. Revenue growth is incredibly slow. And because of that, we just felt as though there were better opportunities, and we still feel this way. That is Graco Inc., ticker GGG. All right. Let's talk about the deal that came out of the U.S.-China summit in London over the weekend. And so as you recall, we used to not have these big tariffs, and then Liberation Day happened, and then tariffs rose to 145%. And then in Geneva, can't even remember when that was because time just flies by these days, there was a framework created for de-escalation. But subsequently, words thrown by the president, actions by China to limit rare earth exports had kind of paused the de-escalation. And so out of this meeting comes some steps in the right direction, albeit not really any remarkable progress. And so out of this, China is allowing the U.S. to import rare earth metals, which it had recently restricted. China has a 10% tariff on the United States. The United States has a 55% tariff on China. Again, keeping in mind, generally consumers end up paying tariffs, right? You're not really tariffing a country. You're tariffing the goods from the country. Taxes paid by the consumers and the importers. But there's also news that China is only capping, or rather is only allowing these rare earth exports for 6 months. And so this hopefully will set the tone for further negotiations moving forward. In return for easing these restrictions, the U.S. agreed to loosen some export controls on jet engines, parts, ethane, some plastic inputs. They also said they would allow Chinese students at U.S. universities, which they had recently, in an escalatory move, said they were thinking about removing. And the reason why this is important is because, well, rare earth minerals are critical for EVs, for wind turbines, for jet engines, for consumer electronics, and they're very difficult to extract from the earth in a clean way. It's very dirty getting these things. But in spite of all this, like I mentioned, right, tariff levels are still elevated. The U.S. is still keeping tech controls in place. Both sides are still leveraging these supply chokeholds and tech restrictions instead of relying on de-escalatory tactics. And so as with these tariffs, right, as with the pause in implementation in Europe as well, deadlines are ahead. And that's why you didn't really see the market react in such a positive way, though the president was touting it as a trade deal. More than anything, it's a very confusing sentence. It was creating a framework to implement an additional framework of de-escalation from several months ago. So as we look forward, the U.S.-China trade dynamic, moving in the right direction, absolutely moving in the right direction, still a lot of potential turbulence ahead. All right, let's pivot back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank for a question on consumer sentiment and the healthcare sector.
Hello, InvestTalk. This is Yannick from Denmark. I have two general questions regarding investment at this time. Would you agree that the sentiment generally in the stock market now is fairly optimistic, and thus it's advisable to be a little bit cautious? That's the first. The second is, I'm looking for sectors that are down this year. You know, every year there's some sectors that are very undervalued and others, they boom, like gold is booming now. Would you agree that the health sector is down this year and thus it might be a good place to find investments at this point in time? Thank you very much. Look forward to your answer, Luke or Justin. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, well, anytime consumer sentiment is too high or too low, you can really benefit from taking the contrarian approach. Now, we have had some positive inflation news, but the inflation positivity is essentially that it is not as bad as expected, right? And so we're still stubbornly above the Fed's 2% target. We're still seeing labor deterioration. We're still seeing business spending pare back a little bit. And so in a way, consumer sentiment is kind of creating a more robust gap between the reality of fundamentals on the ground. And so that's why we as well are a little hesitant at these approaching market highs to think that this is a robust period where it sustainably will be higher. And that doesn't mean you take the zero equity market approach. It just means maybe you're a little bit more hesitant, you're more defensive. Again, your opportunity set is still more strict. Now, you mentioned the healthcare sector, right? Because you are correct. Not necessarily every sector is going to, or rather, not necessarily every year is going to have a down sector, but sectors will underperform other sectors. And so in this instance, you know, we do think, and I already mentioned it to a caller earlier, the one who was talking about Amgen, is that healthcare seems to be in an area where it is underperformed, and there's a lot of opportunity there. It's one of the sectors we have been looking at as well. And so when you're looking to diversify and rotate, you want to move into those sectors that have been left behind, but now provide great value opportunities to invest in good businesses. Thanks for the call. Let's talk a little bit about oil. Oil prices spiked as much as 5% today. Brent hit $69.77. WTI crude rose to $68.15 per barrel, both at two-month highs at the end of the day. And what really drove that and what drove oil companies high as well was a rise in geopolitical tension. So obviously a developing situation, but earlier in the day, we got news that the U.S. embassy was being evacuated in Iraq. And that shocked markets because generally speaking, we're only going to evacuate embassies if we believe there's a threat of regional instability. And Iraq is OPEC Plus's number two producer. Iran's defense minister also threatened U.S. bases if nuclear talks fail further, straining this backdrop of what genuinely could be the catalyst to push oil prices sustainably higher. We also saw a moderate boost, less than expected. OPEC Plus is increasing output by only 411,000 barrels per day. But should tensions continue to rise, the net effect of which will still be a rise in oil prices. We also saw U.S.-China trade starting to thaw as well, another story that was moving markets. But in spite of all of this, in spite of what happened today that could move energy markets, move energy demand, again, if U.S.-China trade relations thaw, global demand goes up, demand for oil goes up as well, prices become higher, supply contraction, prices become ever higher. Everything is a moving piece that matters. Now, with this, you saw U.S. crude stockpiles fell by 3.6 million barrels, beating expectation and, again, signaling these tighter supply conditions. It's difficult to try and predict where these things go, if not impossible. But understanding all of the dynamics that affect many markets, especially the oil market, is incredibly complicated, but it drives so much of company pricing, so much of consumer spending, so much of economic activity globally, that when regional tension like this flares up, Oil markets certainly pay attention. All right, let's keep things moving. We won't be able to answer a question, but hopefully we can play a full one before the break.
I'm interested in buying Cummins. Ticker symbol CMI is a long-term hold. And I'm just wondering what you guys think a good entry price would be. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Alrighty, let's pull up Cummins Inc. Cummins Inc. is a, what's the word I'm looking for? Why am I struggling to find this? It's a manufacturer, right? So they manufacture and design diesel, natural gas, electric, and hybrid powertrains. Sorry about that. Sometimes we all have those brain issues there. And so it's Power Solutions, right? And traditionally, you would expect these names to do better, well, when demand and consumer demand is higher. But we will dive into Cummins when we get back, as well as talk about my last talking point. As always, if you have a question, feel free to call at 888-99-CHART.
'25 rolls on, and you might have some fresh questions for Justin or Luke. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Now, before the break, we heard a question on Cummins Inc. Cummins Inc. is a power solutions company, so they design and distribute components, right? Powertrain components. And one thing about the company, aside from what we'll dive into, which is really a secular headwind, is they have pretty strong growth overall. About 7.7% growth on an annualized basis going back to 2019, but revenue is projected to fall this year. Now their margins, again, pretty solid. 11.6% net margin was what they had last year. Projected to fall to about 8.7%, but still respectable for this type of company. But the question is, why is it trading just above its five-year average? And the answer can be seen in, well, tariff tensions, right? Tariff-driven uncertainty. This is one of the companies that actually had to pull their outlook and guidance. And so the market doesn't necessarily like that. That's why it's down 7.18% year-to-date. I think when we're talking about taking defensive positions in our portfolios, companies that essentially telegraph that they are so exposed to what could go wrong on a tariff side that they have to remove their guidance are ones that for now we should probably keep on our watch list. That's Cummins Inc., good company, just facing some secular headwinds. Ticker CMI. All right. So U.S. oil production is projected to decline from 13.5 million barrels a day to 13.3 million barrels a day by the end of 2025, its first fall since the COVID era dip. And this is in spite of the president's promise while he was campaigning to unleash drilling and drive down energy prices in his second term. In fact, the rig count within the United States is down by more than 10%. Down to 442 rigs from 492 rigs a year ago. So that doesn't just affect next year's output. That can drastically affect future year supply as well. And why is that? We have been talking about this for weeks, for months now. Well, if oil hits a certain price, it becomes not cost effective to continue to operate current wells, dig for new wells, as well. And so when we reach these break-even fears, which roughly $65 for a lot of producers, somewhat lower for others, cutbacks start to happen. And you start to feel the effect of those cutbacks in subsequent months, quarters, and years moving forward. Major shale investors like Quantum Capital Group warn of some policy chaos as well. Trump's tariffs on steel and aluminum have raised input costs. It's squeezed margins, raised the cost at which you break even for even drilling or opening these new wells. After booming during the Biden post-COVID era, shale output may be topping off. right? We're getting some weak fundamental signals from there. Some uncertain policy signals. Analysts at S&P Global actually see it falling even steeper, projecting a 640,000 barrel per day drop by 2026, larger than the total production of some OPEC nations. So the key takeaway here is U.S. energy output is facing a lot of major headwinds. Some because of OPEC Plus's supply increases, but some because of U.S. policy. Falling prices affect output, affect companies. One thing I want to mention before we head off for the day is, of course, the InvestTalk store. Over there at investtalkstore.com, we got shirts like the one I'm wearing right now. We got bucket hats, which is my personal favorite. We got all sorts of hats. We got, I think, coffee cups. And you know what? If you have any suggestions of what types of InvestTalk merch you would like to see on the store, go over to our website. Shoot us an email. Let us know. Our goal is to show that we are all one big family. We can't wait to see you wearing your InvestTalk merch. I'm Luke Guerrero. This completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, which you can get at iTunes, Google Play, or Spotify. And if today's show made you think about your financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirements, whether it's kind of all working together, that's what Justin and I and our team do every day. We talk to people just like you to help give them that peace of mind so they can live their lives. Head over to investtalk.com and hit the portfolio review button. It is free and it is confidential. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.